This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance product line at my online dispensary. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, three stand out, which help support gastric health and offer digestive support. GI Guard AM, GI Guard PM, and Peppermint Oil GI. Numerous clinical studies have demonstrated that these products can help to support GI health and promote gastric comfort. They help maintain the integrity of the stomach lining and its proper immune responses to the typically harsh gastric environment. Their ingredients are backed by solid scientific data. They're only available from healthcare practitioners, but they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocol for life balance. That's drhoffman.com/protocol for life balance. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Your questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. And Layla, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Layla Mudin, registered dietitian nutritionist here in New York, working with Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Hello.
Thank you. Good
that
job.
That sounded too much like automated operator. I didn't mean that.
Maybe you can get like a nutrition app that, you know, it's like, Layla, you know, it's like, answer my nutrition question, you know, instead of Siri.
How many calories are in here?
Right. Should I eat? Layla,
should I
eat
this? No.
To have your phone take a picture of it, it's like,
yeah.
No.
No.
You just record a default no.
Default no. Right. Right. Like the eight ball. Yeah.
There are people like three responses like, that contains gluten.
Yeah, exactly.
Too many carbs.
Too many carbs. Are you allergic to that?
Could be easy to set up.
Oh, my.
Easier to develop than an app for the Iowa caucus, I think, probably.
Oh, my.
That's like, I'm not big on apps today.
Right. You know? It's not app day.
It's, yeah.
Is not there, a good day for apps.
Is there an app for that? Okay, yeah. Speaking of, is there an app for that? Before we get to questions, you know, we're in the midst of something akin to hysteria about the coronavirus, which is a moving target. You know, I actually wrote about it in our newsletter this week, and I talked about it extensively on my radio program last week. And the theme was the good, the bad, and the uncertain. And there's a lot of bad, but there are some good things about it. You know, the fact that it seems to be contained, you know, knock wood. But,
yeah,
you know, it's risky to do that because we're recording this, you know, midweek. And by the time some people listen to this, you know, it may be an entirely different story. So it's hard to, as a broadcaster, to commit to some version of the story on this, only to find that within a day or two that the number of people infected escalates or that it has spread to other countries. As of now, it seems to be rampant in China. It seems to have spread to some Asian nations. It seems to be contained in what we call the West. You know, pretty much they've isolated contacts. They're surveilling them.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of person-to-person contact here in the United States or in Europe, Australia, you know, some of the countries outside of Asia.
Yeah.
I think just today it was announced there was a death in Hong Kong. But I don't think it was from someone who traveled from China, caught it in China, and then it wasn't like it's massively spreading in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Which is a, Hong Kong is sort of an outlier. It's a little bit quarantinable from mainland China because it's got, you know, bridges and it's got, you know, waterways surrounding it and a peninsula, I think.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, I'm hesitant to look forward to any kind of air travel during this time.
You know, apropos of this, I just to give an idea of the level of hysteria, I got an email yesterday from a friend who said, and by the way, just to give you background, this is a guy who's extremely sophisticated. He's a big investment guy. He understands the market like nobody's business. And he like looks at oil futures and he's brilliant. He's got all kinds of degrees in economics and stuff like that. But he asks like a very, what to me sounds like a very naive question. He says, I'm supposed to go to Florida this week. And I'm wondering about the wisdom of getting on a plane.
Yeah.
Because my friend Jack, he says his friend Jack, went to his cardiologist, and the cardiologist said, oh, no, you shouldn't be flying for at least 6 months. Now, you know, what would possess a cardiologist to say that? Is this a guy hanging from a thread? Does he have a recent, heart attack or something, and the altitude might affect him, or, you know, or does the cardiologist really, he's so ignorant outside the field of cardiology that he actually believes that the virus is ready to explode in the United States, and being on a plane is a risk factor for getting a coronavirus. I disabused him of that. I actually referred him to my radio show. I sent him a copy of the article I wrote for my newsletter. And I said, no, you know, but you go on a plane, like you just, your sister just went to Africa, right?
Yes.
And was on a safari.
Tanzania, was on a safari for 5 days.
Came back, had the flu.
Came back, she's got the flu. She lives in Geneva, Switzerland.
But it's not coronavirus. I mean, you...
It's not. It's not. But, you know that's in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
Just talking about it. Because she said this morning, I'm taking zinc and C.
Yeah.
Doc says I've got the regular old flu.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, take some elderberry. And, you know, I want her to go get a thermometer and everything.
But you have, unfortunately, a fairly high likelihood of getting some kind of infection from being on a plane.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All that recirculated air from populations from
somebody's
everywhere.
Sick. So you get a cold, or you
from
get
any,
a flu.
From everywhere.
But it's not yet the coronavirus.
Yeah.
So the other reassuring thing about the coronavirus is that, you know, in China, literally hundreds of thousands of people have this now. And there's no way of knowing because the vast majority of them, they want to stay home.
Yeah.
They're not that sick. They're pretty sick.
Yep.
But they're not like life-threatening sick, you know, they're not gasping for air. They just feel like they have a bad cold or flu. And they also know that if they go to the hospital, that people are going to surround them and literally put them on house arrest in the hospital, away from their families, isolate them, and
they don't want that.
And they, on the chance that maybe they have a cold, the last place they want to go to is the hospital to catch a coronavirus
right.
on top of that.
On top of that, Or the hospital come out with an infection.
So we have no idea. We have no way of knowing how rampant it is in China. Crazy things are happening. It's going to be harder to get iPhones because of the supply chain. It's going to be harder to get certain car parts. A lot of car parts come from Asia. I think Kia, you know, in Korea, has shut down some of their production. Some of the big manufacturers that depend on a supply chain from China, they can't get the stuff. So it's going to have ramifications. I mean, we are going to feel it.
What about the seafood from Southeast Asia? What about things like that?
I don't know. It's going to be, you know, first of all, there are some hints that it may have the potential to be transmitted gastroenterologically.
Yeah.
That some reports are that people who have coronavirus having diarrhea and that they may have coronavirus in the stool, and thus there could be fecal contamination.
Yeah.
And that would bring in the food connection where, you know, other viruses like, you know, for example, hepatitis A is foodborne.
Yes.
It's a foodborne. We don't know if coronavirus is really foodborne because we think it's, you know, respiratory borne like colds. You know, like, you know, if somebody, you know, I generally, you know, when somebody in my family has a cold, you know, and we're worried that, you know, don't use that fork, that person had the cold. It's like, I go, I don't think that's really the thing.
No.
It's more like if that person sneezes or if you touch a surface that person has.
Yeah, wipe down the doorknobs and do all that.
That kind of thing. But it's more, I'm not sure if it's the food, unless you, you know, take the fork and put it in your nostril or something, or in your eye.
In your ear.
Yeah, you're right. You know. So then there's the mask thing.
Yeah.
And a lot, more and more people, I think, are wearing masks now in New York, particularly the Asian people.
Yes. I'm seeing more Asian people around here in masks.
Here's the thing. They do it anyway.
That's true.
I think it's cultural.
Maybe I'm just noticing it more since coronavirus outbreak. I don't know.
It's cultural, but it's disconcerting.
Yeah.
It's disconcerting because you see an Asian person in the subway car.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, look, I guess is it a form of unconscious racism? I mean, people make these associations, you know.
Oh, no.
Nobody has it in New York except for a couple of people who are under observation.
Yeah.
So it hasn't really jumped
from country to country. So I, you know, right now, we're in a wait and see mode. You know, we also, there's some kind of crazy cures that are being purported, you know, like.
Because right now there isn't one.
Right. But there's hope that there are certain antivirals that are now in existence, may have some activity against the virus. They're being intensively tested. Mm-hmm. We'll know soon. There is one case report, a limited case report, where the I think the guy who was pretty sick in New York mm-hmm. was treated with a new medication, uh-huh. actually an existing medication from Gilead Pharmaceuticals.
Uh-huh.
And he was pretty sick. He had a temperature of 102, and the next day his temperature was normal after taking this medication. Now, is it proof positive the medication did it, or did it
run did the fever do it?
Did it run its course?
Okay.
But the other thing to be said about it is that, you know, I'm sort of circling around, is that the death rate from this, while it's killed hundreds of people in Asia, it's about 2% of people who get it. Mm-hmm. As opposed to SARS, where it had a fatality rate of 30%. So that's a related coronavirus.
Wow,
yeah.
Okay.
Now, so it, coronavirus, the original SARS outbreak, which was very scary, and if you remember, it was like, you know, the world was kind of gripped by it, mm-hmm. Was very contagious, very dangerous, but actually affected less people.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And it burned itself out fairly mm-hmm. quickly. And what happened was they actually came up with a vaccine for SARS. It took them 20 months. But by the time the vaccine came out, it was moot because it was gone.
So nobody's really receiving that vaccine anymore.
No, and this vaccine is not targeted to the coronavirus.
Yeah.
They're working hard on vaccines because it's always good to have a backup plan, like should this become, you know, a worldwide health crisis, mm-hmm. You know, that we would have a vaccine. So there's about three different companies with different approaches looking at vaccines. Mm-hmm. Some people say that this was, you know, like for everything, you know, every condition, there's a conspiracy theory. You know, they once said that HIV was a plot to eradicate homosexuals and African Americans.
Oh, my goodness.
So
bizarre.
And now, it a couple of conspiracy theories. One is that it was developed as a means of testing a new vaccine, mm-hmm. and then it was released to promote the sales of vaccines, which is going to be a bonanza for some pharmaceutical company. Huh. I think that's a little too clever.
Yeah.
You know?
Or it was released as a bioterrorism.
Bioweapon, yeah. It was like being developed as a bioterrorism weapon. But if it was a bioterrorism weapon, it's not that effective, really.
Mm.
I mean, if you mm-hmm. want a real bioterrorism weapon, you know, you weaponize smallpox or something mm-hmm. like that, or you weaponize Ebola or, or Marburg virus or something like that, mm-hmm. you know, that is a much more, you know, that's a little, this compared to Ebola is like a slingshot compared to, you know.
An AK-47.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, these conspiracy theories, I don't know. You know, should you drink, bleach? Should you?
Oh, my goodness. I saw that. Yeah, no, like, please don't drink bleach. And ladies and gentlemen, you don't have to go to your refrigerator and throw out all those bottles of Corona. You don't have to do it. That's another joke that's been going around during this.
Well,
time.
A little lime will neutralize uh-huh. the coronavirus. If you suck on a lime, you know, that's a surefire
cure. Citric acid. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
All right. Enough on this. So, you know, we try to provide you with timely updates on this subject, mm-hmm. Which may, within a matter of days, become obsolete mm-hmm. as this is a moving target.
Yeah.
So what are questions, please?
We have from Charles. Hope you are doing well. I've been taking NT Factor on Dr. Hoffman's recommendation, and I know they stopped production about 1 or 2 years ago to change their formula. First Vitamin Shop, then Amazon,
That's not uncommon, is that?
It's not.
Right. Sometimes companies will, you know, they'll change factories, they'll change manufacturing techniques. They own the patent on the stuff, and, you know, maybe they were just switching gears. So then there was a temporary shortage.
Yeah.
And now it's back in circulation.
Yeah. Well, Charles wants to know, is this still a good product?
Yes, recommend it is. It.
Yeah.
And, you know, if not, I wouldn't keep endorsing it mm-hmm. on my radio program mm-hmm. and on my podcasts.
And he asked, does your office sell it? Well, you could get it on FullScript.
You can get it on FullScript,
yeah.
But you can also go directly to ntfactor.com.
ntfactor.com, yeah. right. Okay. So, yes, Charles, it is a good product.
And, you know, so mm-hmm. what it is and why I think it's a good product.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I discovered it about 20 years ago. It is something that works on the mitochondria.
Yeah.
It's based on something called lipid membrane replacement therapy. It works mm-hmm. on the lipid membrane. And lipid membrane is very essential to cell activity and function. Mm-hmm. When the lipid membrane becomes ragged and is not communicating properly with other cells or admitting certain signaling molecules, then there's poor cellular function. And also the mitochondria also has a membrane, and mm-hmm. the mitochondrial membrane also wears out. So the lipids in NT factor, it's basically a lipid, can repair and restore the lipid bilayers of cells. That's the theory. A lot of plausible theories don't translate to tangible benefits, but there are actually clinical studies that show that sick or fatigued patients
do well with it.
Mm-hmm. One of the best studies is on patients with Gulf War syndrome, who were, it's like a form of chronic fatigue syndrome, and it's thought that at least there's a mitochondrial component to it. And those patients actually revived with that. And I've seen
terrific.
Patients do well with it. I get a lot of testimonials, but thank you for telling us about NT factor. It's mm-hmm. really helped me. We have a lot of fatigue patients that we see in our practice, and, you know, we prescribe it routinely.
That's great.
So it's good.
Yeah.
You may want to take higher doses than just one or two a day. You know, patients with extreme fatigue can take 4 to 6.
Yeah.
They've got a product called Healthy Aging, which has some accompanying nutrients that are,
helpful
anti-aging,
in that regard.
You know.
Okay. Charles, thank you for that question. All right. Let's see here. This comes from Sheila. I started using Can-See eye drops in my eyes since the upper lid of my right eye twitches.
Can-See.
Can-See, C-A-N-C.
Yeah, I'm not sure that eye drops would help that very much unless there's an eye irritation.
Yeah, well, these Can-See drops are meant for dry eye. Sheila has dry eye, but my optometrist had no suggestion for the twitches.
Well, the twitches are often due to magnesium deficiency.
Yeah. That would be the first.
Yeah, I would look at magnesium deficiency mm-hmm. because it's one of the subtle signs of magnesium deficiency. We actually had a very nice discussion of dry eye with my colleague, Dr. Rudrani Banik. Mm-hmm. We did a podcast, and that's posted now on drhoffman.com. We talk about dry eye, and dry eye may be nutritional. Studies show that omega-3s, along with borage oil, usually borage oil helps to seal the deal on this,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
can be helped with essential fatty acid supplements.
Yeah. Well, borage oil? What about fish oil for dry eye?
No, fish oil alone in one study was not helpful. But when you add the borage oil,
it works out better with
both. Actually, a big study, I think it was in the New England Journal of Medicine, showed that fish oil was not helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the study... The better study would have been fish oil in combination with borage oil.
Mm.
I think that's a better combo.
Yeah. Sheila has hypertension. That also points to looking at magnesium.
And it also points to the effects of medication. Some medications have the effect of creating dry eye.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Sheila, look into getting some magnesium. You could go to drhoffman.com.
And it's a workup. And, mm-hmm. She said she went to an optometrist. She should go to an ophthalmologist.
Yes, absolutely.
And she should also get tests. There are certain medical conditions that need to be ruled out, such as Sjogren's syndrome. Optometrists will deal with, give you some eye drops maybe, or check your glasses. But they may not, unless they're nutritionally oriented or,
mm-hmm.
Medically trained.
You want a deeper dive. So this Can-See, these drops also have N-acetyl-carnosine.
That sounds good.
Which is interesting.
Well, what they're designed for, the N-acetyl-carnosine purports to dissolve cataracts.
Mm. Dissolve them.
Yeah. We discussed that.
There was a dog study, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Back when?
We discussed
that. We did.
Actually, I discussed it with Dr. Banik on my podcast. And she doesn't think that that study, the studies there are really good quality studies.
Okay.
The problem is they're studies by a Russian guy who is also in the business of selling these types of eye drops.
I see.
So it's kind of like he's validating his own business model.
Okay.
I've not seen them reverse cataracts. I think at present time, the only way to deal with advanced cataracts is to do the surgery. You know, get intraocular lenses, which work fine.
Get bionic vision.
Yep.
Good stuff. Sheila, best of luck to you. All right. Look into some magnesium for that eye twitch.
To me, that's a dead giveaway for that you ought to look at magnesium.
Yeah.
And magnesium, it can have blood pressure benefits, too.
That's true. Marianne writes, I love your podcast. I've been listening for years. Thank you for all the great information.
She's one of the 7 million.
7 million.
Downloads.
Yeah, I can't wrap my brain around that. That's really something. 7 million. Yeah. I was just wondering, why do so many nutraceuticals feel it's necessary to put folate into so many things? And what are the consequences of all this redundancy?
Right.
You know, why is there folate everywhere?
Yeah, it's true that, you know, you're taking like a combination product and it has a little folate, and you're taking another, so folate.
Mm-hmm. Like healthy aging has folate, jigsaw magnesium has some folate in it.
Well, folate is an important nutrient. Is there a downside to too much folate? It's kind of hard to overdose on folate.
Yeah.
It doesn't have liver toxicity. It doesn't really have kidney toxicity. Mm-hmm. It's kind of has low toxicity.
Yeah. And it's very important in cancer prevention, folate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess one of the things that I do is I generally, when I prescribe, I kind of stay away from combo products that have a lot of different ingredients. So,
because there can be redundancy
amongst
all the other things.
If I have, I'll use just pure resveratrol, or I'll use pure, curcumin, or I'll use just vitamin D, and I'll use, and that makes for more capsules.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can be selective so that you can say, okay, I've got plenty of folate in my multi or in my homocysteine formula, and then I'm not going to get it 14 different places.
Right, right. Marianne actually has a follow-up question.
Oh, follow-up.
My husband and I are taking magnesium, but our labs consistently show low magnesium levels.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a recommendation? Should we double our dose of magnesium?
Well, here's the thing. With magnesium, it's sometimes hard to get magnesium levels up. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So, for example, here's an analogy that I think you'll understand is, you can take calcium, and if you have a condition of hypoparathyroidism, which is a low calcium condition, you can take calcium to the cows come home. It still won't raise your calcium because it's regulated.
Yeah.
And I think that there are metabolic conditions that are magnesium wasting conditions or conditions which get in the way of absorption of magnesium. You know, it's like two ways that the bathtub empties. You know, one is that you turn the faucet off and you don't add enough water. And the other is that there's a leak.
Yeah.
So if there's a leak, these are magnesium wasting conditions where you excrete too much magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly stress does that.
Yeah.
Certain medical conditions do that.
Mitral valve prolapse will do that.
Yeah.
You will be chronically lower in magnesium.
Yes.
So you always need to replenish.
Right. Certainly gastrointestinal disorders where you have diarrhea.
Exactly. Malabsorption syndromes.
Taking an acid blocker will do it.
Mm-hmm. Is there a maximum amount somebody should take of magnesium?
Well, you can get in trouble with magnesium if you have a limited kidney function.
Yes.
You can overdose. But people with healthy kidneys, it's kind of hard to overdose on magnesium because before you get too much magnesium in your bloodstream, you'll get the laxative effect of magnesium, which limits the amount you can take.
Exactly. So really, it's to bowel tolerance, Marianne, how much magnesium you should take. And take a look at everything else that might be causing low magnesium.
The other thing is that the measurement, I don't know what measurement they're using, because, maybe they're using some criterion of are they using red blood cell magnesium?
It sounds like it, because she's citing numbers like 2.1.
That's
and 1.7 and 2.5.
But that's actually that's both red blood cell and plasma magnesium, I think. They're similar.
Okay.
I think.
All right. So, but for red blood cell, I know that would be on the lower side. I think an optimal level is 6, and I learned that from Dr. Dennis Goodman.
4 to 6?
Yeah.
4 to 6.
Yeah, 4 to 6.
Okay.
Or so.
Well,
would be a better level, but
I don't know if it's entirely accurate. I think sometimes red blood cell magnesium is suspect because the blood sits around for too long before they process it.
Okay.
So it's hard to get a good red blood cell magnesium.
Yeah. Certain medications can deplete your magnesium if you're taking a proton pump inhibitor or any kind of acid blocker.
Or certain like diuretics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lasix, big time.
Lasix, totally. Because magnesium is also an electrolyte, not just a very necessary mineral.
It is, I think, the most common. Mm-hmm. Would you say it's the most common nutritional deficiency in America, or would you say iron is the most common?
Which in America?
Yeah.
Magnesium. Iron, the rest of the world, maybe.
Because of poor nutrition and parasites.
Poor nutrition and things.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay. We shall pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. Mm-hmm. And when we return, what question will confront us?
Should I take Crestor or take a K9 LDL inhibitor?
I think it's a K9. I think it's an MSK.
MSK.
MS.
An MS. SK something.
Yeah, right. We'll get it right when we return. But K9 sounds like...
Right, K9 sounds like police dog.
It's like calling the dogs.
K9, right.
Unleash the hounds.
Unleash the hounds on your LDL.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we'll be right back with more of Intelligent Medicine.